Now, in our opening study this afternoon, we tried to look at some of the background circumstances to the story of the Jerusalem Poor Fund and the work of Paul the Arms Bearer. And you'll remember that, briefly, what we did was suggested that the earlier collection of Acts chapter 11 sowed a seed, as it were, in the apostle's mind that he was going to take up now as an idea which in fact took several years to mature but eventually bore fruit as the Jerusalem Poor Fund itself to be taken up in the course of his third preaching campaign. We found that not only that, but the circumstances of the Jerusalem conference, which followed on from Acts chapter 11 only a short few years later, would have convinced the apostle that there was some need to bring together Jew and Gentile into the harmony of the gospel, and that if there was something that he, the apostle, could do in that regard to assist that work, then he would strive mightily to do so. In fact, if you come to the epistle of the Galatians and the second chapter, we're told that that was indeed the spirit of the apostle concerning this work. In Galatians chapter 2, we're specifically told that the apostle had this in mind. Now, you'll be aware that there may be some difference of opinion over the exact timing of the epistle to the Galatians. I don't think that in any way that's essential to the story that we're about to embark on, nor to the point of Galatians 2 and verse 10, which says that on the occasion of one of the apostles' visit to Jerusalem, whichever one we think it might have been, the apostles said to Paul in verse 10 that only that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. And so the spirit of the apostle was that he indeed intended to remember the poor in the course of his travels. Not merely because he saw it as a duty or an obligation, but because in the apostle's mind now, a great master plan was taking shape about what he could accomplish in the bringing together of that collection, both to deal with the spirit of Judaism and of pride, and also to bring Jew and Gentile together in this great and mighty work. The word forward there in Galatians 2 verse 10 literally means to be eager. The Revised Version translates it that way. The same which I also was eager to do. And you know, you have to marvel at the spirit of a man who was so busy and yet was prepared to spend time on a mundane thing such as collections. You know, you often ask that, don't you? You say, surely the apostle had enough other things on his mind to not be bothered with the mechanical details of raising money. Paul says, I'm eager to do it. Because he saw a great thing that could be accomplished. The apostle had a marvellously expansive mind. It wasn't just money to the apostle. It wasn't just the collection of cash as far as he was concerned. Here was a means by which the spirit of grace could be seen as an answer and as an antidote to the spirit of law-keeping in ecclesial life. And the apostle wanted to do that. He didn't pass it to somebody else. He said, look, he says, you just leave that to me. I'll fix that. He says, I want to organise that, and organise it he did. And the whole of the third preaching campaign, ultimately, we believe, is built around the story of organising, planning, and executing that collection. I suppose it would be a fair comment to say, if he decided at the time of the Jerusalem conference to take up this collection, why did he wait until the end of the third preaching campaign before he finally did so? And I think the answer is found in Romans chapter 15. Why, if this was such an important work, did the apostle wait until the end of his third preaching campaign before he finally took up this collection? Well, in Romans 15 and verse 23 we're told, the apostle says, but now, having no more place in these parts, and having a great desire these many years to come unto you, that is to Rome, whensoever I take my journey into Spain, I will come to you. For I trust to see you in my journey, and to be brought on my way thitherward by you, if first I be somewhat filled with your company. But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints. So you see what he said in the 23rd verse. He says, I've got no more place in these parts. Now what did the apostle mean? Did he mean that the ecclesias would no longer accept him? No, of course not. The Revised Standard Version renders the phrase no longer having any room for work in these regions. The 20th century New Testament says, now there are no further openings for me in these parts. Moffat says, there's no further scope for work in these parts. And you see, I believe that what the apostle was saying was that his labours in these particular areas had now been completed. The work of preaching the truth had been accomplished. Now, just stop and think about that for a moment. Here, of course, is the area in which the apostle was traversing during these three journeys. And if we were to ask ourselves, well, what areas were covered in those journeys? The answer is that each of the missionary journeys dealt with a particular area or a particular province. So journey one, for example, the first missionary journey, in the main, centred on the region of Galatia. We know that, don't we? That was the first missionary journey. Where was the second missionary journey to? Where was Paul's second preaching campaign? Any comments on that? The first one was to Galatia. Where was the second campaign? Basically. The answer is the second campaign was essentially Macedonia and Achaia, wasn't it? Remember, he came through this region. Remember, the Spirit suffered him not. He tried to go north. He tried to go west. He couldn't. He came across to Troas and was driven by the Spirit blasting upon the sails of his boat into Macedonia and Achaia, which formed the basis for his second preaching campaign. Where was the third preaching campaign? And the answer is, in the main, it focused on Ephesus in Asia. So each of his three campaigns, in the main, dealt with a particular province. Preaching campaign one, Galatia. Preaching campaign two, Macedonia and Achaia. Preaching campaign three, Asia. And now, says the apostle, in Romans 15 and verse 23, there's no more work left for me in these parts. So you see, now he's going to take up the Jerusalem poor fund collection, and the reason why he's going to do that is it's going to become the crowning act, as it were, the crowning glory of all his labours in those four provinces. So it's going to become the culmination of his three campaigns. And once that collection has been taken up, and the generosity and grace of all those Gentile ecclesias has been taken back to Jerusalem, then the apostle is now going to move into further, new, fresh fields of endeavour. He's going to go to Italy. He hopes to go to Spain. But before he does that, verse 25, I've got to go first unto Jerusalem. And the purpose, of course, for him on this occasion to go to Jerusalem was that he might, in fact, take the proceeds of the Jerusalem Poor Fund itself. So the story then of the taking up of the Jerusalem Poor Fund is intimately linked with the third preaching campaign. And in fact, what we're going to do this evening is just to go through some of the details of the third preaching campaign to see how the story of the Jerusalem Poor Fund is woven through that campaign. And I hope what we'll find is that there are many little episodes, many little aspects of the third preaching campaign that suddenly come into focus when we understand the story of the Jerusalem Poor Fund that lay behind that campaign. Now let's start our story in Acts chapter 18, which is in fact where the third preaching campaign begins. In Acts chapter 18 and verse 23, we have the official beginning of the third preaching campaign. Now, perhaps reading from verse 21 for connection. He bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem, but I will return again unto you if God will. And he sailed from Ephesus, and when he'd landed at Caesarea and gone up and saluted the ecclesia, that is the ecclesia at Jerusalem, he went down to Antioch, verse 23, and after he had spent some time there, he departed and went over all the country of Galatia and Phrygia in order. So verse 23 of Acts 18 marks the commencement now of the third preaching campaign of the Apostle Paul. Ask yourself this question. Why does it say in that verse that he specifically went over Galatia and Phrygia in order, says the verse? Tyre says, one after another successively. The Revised Version says he went from place to place through the region. Why this focus on meticulously going through ecclesia by ecclesia through that region? Well, it could be a number of reasons. It certainly wasn't to deliver the decrees of the Jerusalem Council. That was done on his second campaign. So why this emphasis on the fact that he wanted to go over this region consecutively, place by place? And I believe that the reason is because at that time, at the beginning of this third journey, he was now establishing the collections for the poor saints in Jerusalem. Now the apostle was establishing the method of taking up that collection, and he wanted to visit each ecclesia in order through the region of Galatia that that might be done. Now, was it done? Well, yes, it was. Come and have a look at the 1 Corinthians chapter 16. We know that the apostle did this, and it would appear that this is the logical time for this work to have been accomplished. In the 1 Corinthians 16, in verse 1, writing a little later to the ecclesias of Achaia, the apostle Paul says, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the ecclesias of Galatia, even so do ye." When did the apostle give orders to the ecclesia of Galatia concerning the taking up of these collections? And the answer is, I believe, in Acts chapter 18 and verse 23, as he began his third journey and he went over that ecclesia by ecclesia throughout all Galatia, and I believe for the express purpose of giving those orders concerning the taking up of the Jerusalem poor fund. So that was what was happening at the time that this third missionary journey, this third preaching campaign began. And the fact that he's writing to Corinth in the 1 Corinthians 16 tells us that he was now about to institute exactly the same system of things in the ecclesias of Achaia and also in the ecclesias of Macedonia and also in the ecclesias of Asia. So this was going to represent, remember, the culmination of his preaching work in all of these areas. So Macedonia and Achaia were also going to be now taking up those collections, and that's exactly what the apostle is writing to the Corinthians about in the 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Maybe that explains something else too, because if you come back to Acts chapter 19, we come a little further into the story of the third preaching campaign, and we have now the spirit of the apostle as he's about to begin his travels back to Jerusalem, and yet he says something rather peculiar. In Acts chapter 19 and verse 21, it says, "After these things were ended, Paul purposed in the Spirit, when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, to go to Jerusalem, saying, after I have been there, I must also see Rome." So he purposed in his heart to go to Jerusalem. And yet what the verse tells us is that the apostle would not go to Jerusalem unless he had first passed through Macedonia and Achaia. Why? Why was it so important for the apostle on this occasion that before he could go to Jerusalem, he had to pass through Macedonia and Achaia? And the answer is because he was collecting the money. He was going to come through those ecclesias and collect the money. By the time he goes to Jerusalem, which was his real purpose in the Spirit, he had to have the funds with him. He says, "I can't go to Jerusalem until I've first gone through Macedonia and Achaia, because I've now got to gather together the collections from those regions." And so that was the driving spirit, you see, that lay behind this third preaching campaign. And when we come to Acts chapter 20 and verse 1, we pick up the story then after the riot in Ephesus, we're told, and after the uproar was ceased, Paul called unto him the disciples and embraced them and departed for to go into Macedonia. And when he had gone over those parts and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece, which, by the way, is another word for Achaia. So we're told that not only did he come into Macedonia, verse 1, but it says when he had gone over those parts. And that phrase, "gone over those parts," has got the same sense, hasn't it, as what he did in Galatia, that he went through Galatia in order. Why was he careful to go over the parts of Macedonia? Because he was organizing and completing the collection in this area at this very time. So he was moving through the ecclesias of Macedonia that the work of the collections might be finalized in that region. And when he'd finished going over the parts of Macedonia, verse 2, and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece. Now, do you know, brothers and sisters, in between Acts 20, verse 1, and Acts 20, verse 2, lies the writing of the 2 Corinthians. You want to take a note of that. So the second epistle of the Corinthians was written in between Acts chapter 20 verse 1 and Acts chapter 20 verse 2. He was up in Macedonia at the time. He was busy with the work, we believe, of the collections at this very moment. And whilst he was up there, he had heard worrying stories about the Corinthians and their attitude to him. He'd already written back in the first epistle about the need to start the collections, but what had happened, you see, was that the work of the Judaizers had reached Corinth ahead of the Apostle Paul. And they had so mightily striven against the Apostle, they had so undermined his credentials, of course, that not only did the Ecclesia now doubt the apostolic authority of the Apostle, but they'd stopped the collections as well. And the Apostle had to try and deal with that at the very time that he's about to complete this third journey. Everything's critical. The whole story of the fund hangs in the balance in Acts chapter 20, because he has reports concerning the fact that the Corinthians, the Achaeans, have turned away from him, and so in fact he sent Titus down to try and deal with that, didn't he? To try and restore their trust and their confidence in him. And fortunately, Titus came back with a positive message to say that Corinth at last had been restored to the apostle, and now, on that basis, he is going, in fact, to write the second of Corinthians to them. And so he wrote the second of Corinthians, if you like, in between Acts 20 verse 1 and while he was still in Macedonia, and before he came into Achaia at the end of verse 2. And he dispatched Titus back to the Ecclesia with that epistle, and in that epistle he's going to write concerning the fund. Now, here we look at the studies that we're actually going to deal with, and you'll see that the bulk of our studies, God willing, will in fact focus on these two marvellous chapters in the second of Corinthians, chapters 8 and 9. Now, you might even, if you haven't done so, you may take the time to go home and read them. And you know what you'll find when you read 2 Corinthians 8 and 9? You'll say, as my wife did when I told her that I was first going to do this special effort, in fact, about a week after I decided to do this, it came up in the daily readings. And at the end of the daily readings, my wife looked at me and lifted an eyebrow and she said, "You're going to do a special effort on that?" I said, "Yes, that's right." And they're two very peculiar chapters, if you don't know what the background is. But when you know the background to those chapters, I'll tell you what, they come alive. And so what we're looking at here is the background and the story of what prompted the apostle to begin the collections. God willing, in our exhortation tomorrow morning, we're going to deal with the first 12 verses and the apostle's appeal to Corinth that they might enthusiastically support the fund. In our study on Tuesday, we're going to look at the 2 Corinthians chapter 8, the second part, and the need for cooperation that was so essential that that fund might be finished. On Thursday evening, the first 7 verses of the 9th chapter. On Saturday evening, the balance of the 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And then finally, in our concluding exhortation, God willing, next Sunday, we're going to deal with the story of the apostles' final journey back to Jerusalem with all the bags together in order that that fund might in fact be presented. So here we are in Acts 20 verses 1 and 2, and we're at the very time that he's about to write those two chapters. And he's going to write those two chapters to try and appeal to the Corinthians that they might re-begin their contributions to the fund, which urgently needed to be completed now, because the apostle was running short of time. He didn't have much time. He needed to be, or at least this was his plan, he wanted to be back in Jerusalem very shortly, and so he writes that appeal in the 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9 in order that they might in fact recommence their collections. You know, I tell you what, it's a marvellous thing, really, these two chapters. You see, they've only just been reconciled to the apostle. Titus has come back to Paul, who's up in Macedonia. Paul says, "The hearts of the brethren are with you. All is well." Paul says, "Well, I'm thankful for that." But now he says, Titus, "I've got to send you back again with this second epistle," because he says, "We've got to get these collections concluded. I've got to get to Jerusalem. We're actually waiting for the contributions from Achaia." And that was the background to the writing of these two chapters. Now you stop and think about it. You know, one of the things that had been suggested about the Apostle Paul that had undermined their confidence in him, the Judaizers had suggested that Paul was sort of, maybe there was more than one reason behind the gathering of all this money. And, it would be worth perhaps counting up to see just how many bags safely did reach Jerusalem. What was the apostles' real intentions in gathering all of this cash? and doubts were sown in the minds of the ecclesias of Achaia concerning the integrity, the moral integrity of the apostle. Now, he's only just been reconciled to them, and he's about to write an epistle to them, and he's going to devote two chapters, and do you know what he's going to try and do? He's going to try and get their cash. They've only just been restored to good relations. Now, how do you write a chapter asking that brethren give money to you when you've only just been brought back into good relations with them? It's a fairly delicate sort of task. Well, the apostle got round that because he never used the word cash, but he used everything else he could think of. So in those two chapters we find that what the apostle really wanted was the money of the Achaeans, but of course more than their money, he wanted the spirit with which that money was given. And so he calls it not their cash, he calls it their liberality in chapter 8 and verse 2. He calls it their gift. In chapter 8 and verse 6, he calls it their abundance. In chapter 8, verse 20, he calls it their ministering. In chapter 9, verse 1, their bounty. In chapter 9, verse 5, their righteousness. In chapter 9, verse 9, their service. In chapter 9, verse 12, their distribution. In chapter 9, verse 13, and all the time, he's really talking about their money. But that was really what the money meant to the apostle, wasn't it? And that's how the apostle saw their money. And that's why the apostle wanted their money. He didn't want their cash as cash. Oh, he wanted their collections, but what he really wanted was the gracious operation of their hearts in spontaneously giving for the needs of the poor saints in Jerusalem. And the apostle, I'll tell you what, they're two of the most eloquent chapters that the apostle ever penned in order that he might plead with the hearts of the brothers and sisters in Achaia and that they might respond to that appeal and on that basis give generously and graciously in order that the whole collection might be brought to an end, that those of the collections of Galatia and Asia and Macedonia might now be added to those of Achaia, and that he could make his journey back to Jerusalem. Well, those are the two chapters, God willing, that we're going to look at in a lot more detail in the course of our studies together. They're two marvellous, marvellous chapters in which the apostle bears his own heart and soul and mind that he might convince the Achaeans to give generously to that particular work. Well, did it work? Did the appeal of the 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 bear fruit? And the answer is, yes, it did, because Romans 15 tells us so. So if we come back now to Romans chapter 15. We find that in fact is exactly what happened, that the appeal of the apostle was successful, because Romans 15 says, verse 25 again for connection, but now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. It hath pleased them verily, and their debtors they are, for if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things. When therefore I have performed this and have sealed to them this fruit, I will come by you into Spain. And so in Romans 15 we're told from verses 26 to 28 that the very work of the apostle that he laboured so diligently over in the 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 bore fruit because it pleased them of Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints. And what a thrill it was to the apostle as he now was able to make his way back to Jerusalem in order to present those contributions. The word contribution, by the way, in verse 26 is koinonia, a certain fellowshipping together for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. And so now the collections are complete. He's got the funds from Asia. He's got the funds from Galatia. He's got the funds from Macedonia. The Achaeans have now responded. The journey is now ready to begin. The apostle is about to commence his journey back to Jerusalem. We're told about that in Acts chapter 20 if we come back to the record. So you notice in Acts 20 verse 3, it says that when the apostle came into Achaia, he abode there 3 months. And when the Jews laid wait for him as he was about to sail into Syria, he purposed to return through Macedonia. So, in fact, what we're told in Acts chapter 20 and verse 3 is that the original intention of the apostle was actually to try and catch a pilgrim ship, probably from Cenchrea, which used to stop at various key ports in the Mediterranean in order to convey people back to Jerusalem in time for the Passover. We believe that it was one of these Passover boats that the apostle intended to catch from the region of Achaia, in fact from the port of Cenchrea. But we're told in verse 3 that there were certain Jews which laid wait for him, and as a result of that he was not able to catch that boat. He had to alter his plans. He had in fact to go back through Macedonia, and because we're told in verse 6 of this verse that they sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, the implication is that instead of getting all the way to Jerusalem in time for Passover, that he in fact ended up spending Passover at Philippi. He was still in Macedonia at Passover time because he hadn't been able to catch that boat. By the way, we should take a note, shouldn't we, in Acts 20 and verse 3, that that's when Romans was written. So 2 Corinthians was written in between verses 1 and 2. Romans was written in the 3 months, as verse 3 tells us, that he abode in Achaia. And it was while he was down there that he wrote the Romans. And of course he writes in Romans, he says, I'm about to go. He says, I'm on my way because it's pleased them of Achaia to make a certain contribution. Just about to start the journey as he writes the epistle to the Romans. And that's synchronized with Acts 20 and verse 3. So, that makes good sense, doesn't it? Because in Acts 20 and verse 4, it says, there accompanied him into Asia Sopater of Berea, and of the Thessalonians Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe and Timotheus, and of Asia Tychicus and Trophimus. These going before tarried for us at Troas. You ask yourself the question, why is it that Acts 20 suddenly gives us this list of people that were accompanying the apostle on this occasion? Why do we need to know of all these brethren? And where they came from? Why is that important? Well, the answer is, of course, because these are the delegates from the ecclesias that are accompanying the apostle with the poor fund back to Jerusalem. And that's why they're being enumerated. Now, just have a close look and see who we've got. So remember, we've got those key areas of Galatia, Asia, Macedonia, and Achaia. And here we have, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 4, we believe, a list of, in fact, the delegates who are going to represent the various provinces. So first of all, it says there was Sopater of Berea. So we've got Sopater from here. We've got of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus. So 2 members from Thessalonica. I'll come back to Philippi in a moment. Then we're also told that there was Gaius of Derbe. Where was Derbe? Well, Derbe, of course, was one of the Galatian ecclesias. And then it also mentions Timotheus. Where did Timotheus come from? Timotheus came from Lystra, which was another Galatian ecclesia. So Gaius and Timotheus represent the 2 delegates from the Galatian ecclesias. So we have Sopater, Aristarchus and Secundus from Macedonia. We have Gaius and Timotheus from Galatia. Do we have anybody from Asia? Yes, it says of Asia, Tychicus and Trophimus, who in fact both came from the region of Ephesus. So you see, what was happening here was a gathering together of all the delegates for the fund. Now you'll notice that we've drawn a line there suggesting that there was a delegate from Philippi. Who do you think the delegate from Philippi would have been? Any guesses on that? Yes, we believe it was Luke. Now, let's work out why it's Luke. Come back to Acts 16. Now, you'll remember this little key in Acts 16. Remember the change of pronouns in Acts 16 as we work out that Luke has joined the company of the apostles. So remember, in verse 8 it says, they, passing by Mysia, came down to Troas. Verse 10, and after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavoured to go into Macedonia. So in Acts 16 and verse 10, the change of the personal pronoun to we tells us that Luke, the writer of the story, has joined the company of the apostle. And where are they going to? They're on the way to Philippi. But do you notice Acts 17, verse 1? In the very next chapter, and in the first verse it says, now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, They came to Thessalonica. So you see, whilst we believe that Luke joined the company of the apostle in Acts 16 verse 10 as they went to Philippi, he's left it again by the time we come to Acts 17 verse 1 and Paul moves on to Thessalonica. Luke stayed at Philippi. That's the implication of Acts chapter 16. And I believe that he didn't rejoin the company of the apostle until this moment now in Acts chapter 20 as they're about to go back to Jerusalem with the collections. Now come back and have a look at Acts 20. And it's not until Acts 20 and verse 4 that the personal pronoun suddenly appears again in the record. So we're told in verse 4, and there accompanied him into Asia, Sopater, Aristarchus, Secundus, Gaius, Timotheus, Tychicus, Trophimus, verse 5, these going before tarried for us at Troas, and we sailed away from Philippi. There's Luke rejoining the company of the apostle. So he was in Philippi in all the intervening period. Several years, we believe, that Luke spent in the ecclesia at Philippi. He's now rejoined the company of the apostle as they're about to leave. And I believe that Luke went as the delegate of the Philippian ecclesia. And I'll tell you why. Because we know that the Philippian ecclesia was the most generous of all the ecclesias. Not only were the Macedonians the most generous of all provinces, but the Philippians were the most generous of all the Macedonian ecclesias. It is inconceivable to think that there would be no delegate from Philippi. But because Luke's writing the story, he doesn't want to say, and by the way, I was the delegate from Philippi. Luke's more modest than that. And so he simply gives us a clue by saying, and we sailed away from Philippi, verse 6, to tell us that he, again, has joined the company of the apostle and to leave us to draw our own conclusions as to why it was that he was with the apostle on this occasion. Now, that would be appropriate because that would then leave four delegates from Macedonia, twice as many as Asia and twice as many as Galatia. That would be typical of the Macedonian generosity of spirit. So there's the brethren that we have mentioned. And that's why Acts 20 and verse 4 tells us about all these people, because they're actually Paul's travelling companions. If you come to the 1st of Corinthians chapter 16, we've already looked at this text, but we might just mention again in this context, and that's to remind ourselves that this was the principle that the apostle was going to operate on. In the 1st of Corinthians 16 and verse 3, we're told, and when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. So you see, they were to be, remember, chosen delegates from the ecclesias. And they were to be approved by, obviously, some form of ecclesial vote and confirmed by letter that they were to represent the ecclesias of that area. Well, there's the list of the delegates in Acts chapter 20, and that's why they're mentioned. And they did represent all the different places. Well, come back to Acts chapter 20 then, and let's just take up the story a little further. So the journey's about to begin. The money's collected, the delegates are there, and they're now about to commence that journey back. You remember this in Acts chapter 20 and verse 13. It's always been a little bit of a puzzle, hasn't it? Acts 20 verse 13. We're told that shortly after the journey began from Troas, it says that we went before ship and sailed unto Assos, there intending to take in Paul, for so had he appointed, minding himself to go afoot. Now we happen to know that the geography of that region is that there is a large peninsula that the boat had to travel around to get to the next port. And that the Apostle Paul had said, look, you chaps stay on the boat and you sail around. But he said, I'm going to go by foot across the peninsula. It was about 20 miles walk. He says, I want to go on my own. Ever stop to ask yourself why Paul wanted to go on that journey by himself? Why did Paul, in Acts 20 verse 13, why did the apostle want to go across that peninsula on foot by himself? And I think the reason is because he was worried about how this was all going to work out at Jerusalem. What was on his mind at this time was the reaction of the Jerusalem Ecclesia to the presentation of this fund. He wanted time to clear his thinking and to clear his mind and to plan out what he was going to do and what he was going to say. And I'll show you that because Romans 15 says so. Look, Romans 15. Now remember, Paul's only written Romans 15 just previously. What's on the apostle's mind at this time? Well, we're told in Romans 15, and taking up the record this time from the 29th verse, he says in Romans 15 and verse 29, he says, I'm sure that when I come unto you, I shall come in the fullness of the blessing of the gospel of Christ. And part of the fullness of the blessing of the gospel of Christ, of course, is the bringing of Jew and Gentile together. And then he says, verse 30, now I beseech you, brethren, for the Lord Jesus Christ's sake, and for the love of the Spirit, that ye strive together with me in your prayers to God for me, that I may be delivered from them that do not believe in Judea, and that my service which I have for Jerusalem may be accepted of the saints. You see, the apostle was at one and the same time exhilarated with what he was about to do, and fearful of just how it would go. And that's what's on the apostle's mind at that time as he begins that journey. And I believe that that at least was one of the reasons. There might have been others, I know, but at least I believe that that's one of the reasons why the apostle wanted that time on foot by himself in Acts 20, verse 13. Because he wasn't really sure how it was all going to go. He was agitated in his mind. He desperately prays for the supporting prayers of the brethren here that he might be delivered from those that do not believe in Judea when he finally arrived there. Come back to Acts chapter 20. One can imagine that time as the apostle strode over the peninsula, oblivious to everything about him, as he planned out what he was going to do, what he was going to say, how best to present things, imagining in his mind all of the circumstances that would result in that meeting in Jerusalem. And finally meeting up with the brethren at Assos, where as verse 14 says, we took him in and came to Mytilene. You know, we're told in verse 16, Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus, says the record, because he would not spend the time in Asia, for he hasted, if it were possible for him, to be at Jerusalem the day of Pentecost. Remember, he's already missed Passover. He's far too late for Passover. He kept Passover at Philippi. But it says here now that he's determined to be there, if at all possible, the day of Pentecost. Why was Paul so keen to be there in time for Pentecost? Because on the day of Pentecost, two wave loaves representing Jew and Gentile were waved together before Yahweh. And the apostle wanted to be in Jerusalem at that time when he presented that money representing the love of the Gentiles for their Jewish brethren, that those two wave loaves, both baked with leaven, might be consecrated before God. Oh, can you see the purpose, the spirit of what that would have meant to the apostle as he went up with that collection to bind Jew and Gentile together, if it were possible, he says, that I might be there in time for Pentecost. That rings true, doesn't it, in the story of the bringing together of this poor fund. You remember in Acts chapter 20, the record goes on to tell us about Paul's speech to the elders at Ephesus. Verse 32, the end of Paul's speech of warning to the elders of Ephesus. He says, and now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. And then all of a sudden, uncharacteristically, the apostle suddenly bursts out with this statement in verse 33. I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. What made the apostle suddenly cry out the words of Acts 20, verse 33? At the end of his speech of warning to the Ephesian elders, what made the apostle suddenly burst forth with this anguished cry from the heart? I've coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. You know what it's an allusion to, don't you? Who's the man who saw 200 pieces of silver and a wedge of gold and a goodly Babylonish garment, and of whom the record says in Joshua 7 and verse 21, and when I saw them, I coveted them.
And you know what Achan was? He was the man who troubled Israel. That's what the Judaizers were saying about Paul. They were saying, he's the troubler of the ecclesias. And that hurt the apostle. He'd given 3 years of his life to gather that money. And all the Judaizers could do was to suggest that he had base and impure motives in even bringing it together. And he can't stop himself. At the end of that appeal, he says, I have coveted no man's gold or silver or apparel. I am not the Achan that troubles the ecclesias, he says. That was wrung out of the heart of the apostle. Because he's at that very time about to begin the journey back with the money, and he's had to endure all sorts of unjust criticism as a result of his labours. See, all the way through this story of the third preaching campaign is this other story woven in it of the collection of the money. Acts chapter 21, verse 14. When we would not be persuaded, when he would not be persuaded, we ceased, saying, the will of the Lord be done. And after those days, we took up our carriages and went up to Jerusalem. Do you know that the story of this journey back to Jerusalem occupies two chapters, Acts 20 and Acts 21. They had numerous stops on the way. And yet it's only in Acts chapter 21 and verse 15 it says, and after those days we took up our carriages and went to Jerusalem. One would imagine that they took up their carriage every day. One would imagine that they'd been taking up their carriage for weeks. Why does it suddenly mention in verse 15 of Acts 21, at this particular moment, just before they get to Jerusalem, we took up our carriages? And the answer is because the word carriages doesn't really mean carriages. The word apiskuazo means to literally pack up one's bags. After we had packed up our bags, we went up to Jerusalem. Why would we be told just on this particular occasion, just before they get to the city, that they pack their bags? And the answer is because the bags that they packed were bags of money. And what we're being told in Acts 21 verse 15 was that here now was the final checking to ensure that everything concerning the Jerusalem Poor Fund was in order. Are all the bags here? Do they all still have their seal? Are all the delegates present? Is the tally complete? Is everything in order? And after we had packed our bags, we went up to Jerusalem. And that's why there's an emphasis on the packing of the bag, because the apostle wanted to make sure that everything was exactly right just before he got to Jerusalem, in order to present those very bags which had been carefully packed on this occasion. You see, the whole of this third preaching campaign is impregnated with the story of the Jerusalem Poor Fund. Makes that story come alive, doesn't it? All of a sudden, things that are difficult to understand in that narrative become understandable when we realise that here is the very time when now the collection was indeed to be taken up. And as we looked at Acts chapter 24 and verse 17, we remember these words that the apostle said as he gave evidence for the very reason for his journey on this occasion. Remember Acts 24 and verse 17. He says, well, why did I come to Jerusalem on this occasion? Well, he says, after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offering. That was the purpose of this particular visit. What do you think it means when it says, now after many years? There were obviously several visits, weren't there, of the apostle to Jerusalem. We've got five on the chart here. There was possibly a sixth after his release from prison. After many years of what? I think that when he says in verse 17, now after many years I came to bring alms, I believe that he went back in mind and in spirit to that earlier collection of Acts chapter 11. And he remembered that wonderful time when he'd gone down with Barnabas on an earlier time to bring alms to his brethren. Remembered that fondly. Had good memories of that. And now he says, now after many years, as it were, I'm come again for the same purpose. I am Paul the alms bearer, and I've come to try and bind Jew and Gentile together by this spirit of gracious offering which the Gentiles have freely given. So that's the story that we're going to be looking at, God willing, in the course of our studies, and hopefully what we've done this evening is to help lay the foundation for the spirit particularly of these two chapters that we're going to devote some considerable time to now, the 2nd of Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. We're going to see in these chapters how one can move people by entreaty when one cannot compel them by law. The apostle, remember, couldn't force them to give a penny, could he? He had to convince them to give out of their own spontaneous love, out of their own gracious spirit of faithfulness in the truth. It had to be a collection prompted by the power of love and not legalism. And he was going to write two of the most wonderful chapters that he would ever pen with all his heart, that he might move them to that spirit of giving. And wonderfully give, we believe, they did. You know, I think that if there's anything we learn in this story, it's not just the story of what grace can inspire as opposed to what law can compel, although that perhaps is one of the greatest lessons. But I think one of the things that we learn from this story is how the apostle was able to take up a mundane thing, just the old collection bags, and somehow invest that, charge that with a deeper spiritual significance. You know, there's a tremendous lesson in that. There's lots of labours that we perform in the truth that might at first sight appear very ordinary, very humble, very mundane. They needn't be that way, brothers and sisters. It's all based on our attitude of mind, what we see in those things. We can make them as profound and as satisfying and as rich and as spiritual as we care to make them, or we can treat them as simply mundane chores. The apostle wasn't like that. He took something as practical and as ordinary as collecting money and wrote two of the most beautiful chapters that you could ever be privileged to study, in which he lifts our minds beyond money, finally, as we're going to see tomorrow morning, to the very offering of Christ himself and compares it with the giving of our Lord in sacrifice. A marvellous mind and spirit that this apostle had. Might we be moved as we come together in these considerations to be thankful for what the apostle has written and to look forward to the time when he shall be in the earth again and when we shall meet him, this great apostle to the Gentiles who came on this occasion to bring alms to his countrymen.